Do not limit your definition of what you are. A CPA is not somebody with technical skills. They are a business professional who can help people run their hospital or their nonprofit or, in fact, their retail operation better.
Hey, gang. We're back with another episode of Future Proof. As always, I'm your host, Bill Sheridan. And let's start with the obvious. I'm sick. I'm fighting a cold this week, so, I don't sound my best at all. But, you know, the show goes on, right? I'm like the post office, man. Neither rain nor snow nor gloom of night can, keep me from helping you become a little bit more future ready, I guess. So here we go with episode 54. And this is probably a good time to tell you that this week's podcast is sponsored by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. So, you know, a lot of folks, and myself included, I'm as guilty as anyone, but a lot of folks talk about this notion of becoming future ready as if it's some sort of magic trick. You know, we've got to learn all kinds of new stuff, new skills, new technologies, new strategies, and business models in order to outmaneuver the machines and remain relevant. And to some extent, I guess that's true. This isn't going to be easy. We've got some, you know, serious work to do from here on in. But on the other hand, there is a school of thought, and a pretty well-supported and powerful school of thought, by the way, that says in order to become future ready, we really need to be doing nothing more than what we all should have been doing right from the start. And that is simply to provide excellence. Excellence, certainly to our clients and customers, but just as importantly, to our employees. And where does excellence come from? How does it start? Well, Tom Peters, you may know the name. He co-wrote In Search of Excellence, one of the best-selling business books of all time. He also wrote The Little Big Things, which Warren Bennis called the single best management book he's ever read. As deep a thinker in this space as exists in the world today, that Tom Peters. His latest book is called The Excellence Dividend, and I want to read to you a brief passage from that book. Here's what Tom Peters writes. Listen to this. He says, quote, "Excellence equals the next 5 minutes. Excellence is not a long-term aspiration. Excellence is the ultimate short-term strategy. Excellence is the next 5 minutes or not. Excellence is your next conversation or not. Excellence is your next meeting or not. Excellence is shutting up and listening, really listening or not. Excellence is your next customer contact or not. Excellence is saying thank you for something small or not. Excellence is the next time you shoulder responsibility and apologize or not. Excellence is pulling out all the stops at warp speed to respond to a screw up or not. Excellence is the flowers you brought to work today or not. Excellence is lending a hand to an outsider who's fallen behind schedule or not. Excellence is bothering to learn the way the folks in finance or IS or HR think or not. Excellence is way over preparing for a 3-minute presentation or not. Excellence is turning insignificant tasks into models of excellence or not. Excellence is conventionally, in fact, almost without fail, seen as a long-term aspiration. I disagree, vehemently disagree. Excellence is not a destination at which you arrive on a glorious sunny day after years of brutally hard work. Excellence is a way of life that sustains us and inspires us day in and day out, minute in and minute out. There is no long term. There is only the way we act when we step out into the corridor after a meeting or the quality of your next 4-line email. The manifestation of excellence or not in our moment-to-moment behavior is the bedrock beneath the bedrock," end quote. And, you know, wow. That book, by the way, The Excellence Dividend, great book. Go buy it now. But this idea has become so fundamental in my mind ever since I read that book that I wanted to explore it a little further. So I'm honored and humbled and amazed to tell you that this week's guest is none other than Tom Peters. And what a great guy, by the way. And we had a terrific conversation about excellence as a competitive advantage and all that that entails, including the people we surround ourselves with, culture, how to hire the right people. And he had some very direct and pointed and terrific suggestions specifically for accounting and finance pros. So take notes, people. There's gold in the next 30 minutes or so. Here is my conversation with Tom Peters.
One thing before you move ahead that you may or may not be aware of, you are talking to a native Marylander.
Oh, awesome. Where are you from originally?
Well, I was born at Johns Hopkins Hospital in Baltimore and then lived the little town, I guess it maybe it's known now, Severna Park, but it's about 6 miles north of Annapolis.
Oh, wow, that's small world. And now you are where?
Now I am on what's called the south coast of Massachusetts, which means basically New Bedford, the old whaling capital. It's 80 miles south of Boston.
Okay.
But given the way the world is, meaning Baltimore, Washington, or Boston, given the traffic, you can't get there from here.
Yeah, that's a fact. That's a fact. You ever get back to Maryland at all?
Or? Yeah, occasionally. The thing that will date me in your mind, I'm sure, is BWI was called Friendship International Airport, and my buddies and I watched them build it.
Oh my gosh. Wow. All right. So there
it is. And much more important, in 1953, I was on the streets of Baltimore for the welcoming day when the Orioles stopped being the St. Louis Browns and became the Baltimore Orioles. That's much more important.
Now, you might not want to give me too much information here. You're seriously dating yourself now. So
I know, but what the hell? No, I will be a Baltimore boy forever.
That's great. Well, listen, thanks for the time and for being here. I want to spend most of this time talking about your latest book, The Excellence Dividend, which has become kind of a Bible of sorts in our office. I mean, I guess my first question is, you know, if you believe the experts and the research, our profession, the accounting and finance profession, will be one of the professions most greatly impacted by automation. You call it the jobs apocalypse, I guess, machines doing what we've done for generations. So what's our way out of that? How do we ensure our continued relevance going forward?
Well, I've got a strong bias about the way out of it. And obviously, you can't have one idea. The way out of it is UPS recently service marked United Problem Solvers. And UPS used to throw packages at your back porch. And UPS now says to Home Depot, we will manage your entire logistics system.
Wow.
My bottom line is adding more and more value, and some piece of that indeed has to do with the keeping up with the software and so on, but it's much more significant than that. It's being a full service consultancy. I mean, the slide I use when I launch this discussion in a speech is an article that really floored me, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, from The Economist. And it says, Rolls-Royce now earns more from tasks such as managing clients' overall procurement strategies and maintaining aerospace engines it sells than it does from making them. And, you know, I wrote a book, you're kind to mention The Excellence Dividend, but, and, you know, people have been amazingly kind and they've bought a lot of my books, and obviously I'm happy about that. The only thing I'm irritated about, and I am really irritated about it, is in 1999, I did a set of three books. The one that sold like hotcakes was called The Brand U50. The one that should have sold is one that was called The Professional Service Firm 50:50 Ways to Transform Your quote-unquote department into a professional service firm whose trademarks are passion and innovation. And, you know, that's my key, as I just suggested, is more and more and more for your client. Mm-hmm. I spoke to a group of distribution companies. I think they distributed food machinery. Mm-hmm. And, it sounds like about as different from accountancy as possible, but it's not true. Because on the one hand, the people they used to sell, well, bottom line, the people they used to sell it to were doing their purchasing and doing their hunting for the equipment. It all was online and the distributor was toast. And I said to these guys, listen, you know more about the equipment business and how it's used than anybody else. Become an irreplaceable, like UPS becoming United Problem Solvers, become an irreplaceable professional service firm that basically says to your clients, we'll do any damn thing you want us to do.
And I mean, the word that you use over and over again is excellence, just going above and beyond, right? I mean, that seems to be our competitive advantage. In a world where, you know, a lot of the foundational stuff that we've done for generations is being automated away.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the book, and again, it's hardly accountants and it's hardly you and it's hardly me, but I did this little section that was called There Need Be No Such Thing as a Commodity. And I chose I said the local plumber or electrician does not have to provide a commodity service. If he knows his job, if he's learning new tricks on time, if he has a good disposition, if he shows up on time, if he's neatly dressed, if he has a spiffy truck, and the list goes on purposefully for about a page and a half. And my point was that a plumber or an electrician can, in fact, distance himself or herself from the herd as much as an accountant or a whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's doing incredibly excellent work and boring, as in not boring, but boring as in drilling, mm-hmm. Deeper and deeper into your client operations. The other thing I would say, which is, to my mind, incredibly important, and particularly in your business, albeit there's a hell of a variety of stuff that people do, is in 2019, as much as in 1919, you are as good as the quality of your relationships. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a paper, it was actually published later on Medium, and I called it The Speed Trap. And I said, everybody wants to do everything faster and faster and faster. But the stuff that matters, like excellence, like client service, like getting to know your clients better, it takes the same damned amount of time that it did 100 years ago, and it remains the competitive advantage. Mm-hmm. If I know you incredibly well, then, you know, over beer or over popsicles or what have you, we can talk about the additional ways that I can help you. And I don't mean obviously relative to our conversation, but I just don't have any, I was at McKinsey & Company, a professional service firm. Mm-hmm. I've run my own company for the last 40 years. I have no patience for anybody who says that they can't develop great client relationships and figure out additional things that they can do to help the client achieve excellence.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's true impatience. Yeah. I hope I'm not arrogant, much of the time. But I did. No, I wrote it down. I said, if people had bought my damn book called The Professional Service Firm 50, it would have saved 1 million jobs from artificial intelligence and offshoring. Oh, you know, when that person in a four-person department, little teeny accountancy department within a 50-person company, she or he can totally transform what they do.
That's incredible. And I'm guilty. I've not read that book, but that'll be next on my list.
Damn well better. The good news is you can get it by this time for $1. And so my royalties at the most will be a penny. So that means that I don't really have any great reason to make my sales pitch.
There you go. Well, now, and you make the point, I think a really interesting one, that if we're going to provide excellence to our clients and customers and build those types of relationships that allow us to add greater value, a key first step in that is treating our own employees well. Tell me a little bit about that. Why is that such an important step in this whole process?
Well, and this is probably being unfair to the rest of the world that are not accountants or professionals like accounting folks, is, you know, the reality is, well, the robots are more in the automobile plants than anywhere else.
Yeah.
In the world of CPAs or an accountancy firm, to an infinite degree, we are as good as the quality and the attitude of the people who work for us. And, you know, one other thing, and this is really an important aside, I don't go to church as much as I ought to and so on, so I'm not peddling religion. But what I am saying today, which ties into your first sentence, is because of the threat of automation, AI, whatever it is, every leader in 2019, has not been true in the past, has a moral responsibility to make sure that every single person who works for them, including subcontractors, if they're on something as short as a 6-week job, when that person finishes after 6 weeks, she or he should be better prepared for the future. I mean, we really can have a jobs apocalypse, and there is a way to beat it. And the way to beat it is to help people get better at relationships, to help them get better at the technical part. But, you know, anybody who has his hat that says manager, boss, or project manager has a moral responsibility to the employee, to the community, to the country, for God's sakes. It's a different ball game than it was. It was always a good idea to help people grow. Now it's an imperative. And if you go home at the end of the night and you haven't helped people do that, you're on my S list.
And we don't want to be there. How do we go about finding outstanding employees in the first place? I mean, how do we go about surrounding ourselves with folks that we want to, you know, treat well? I mean, what kind of characteristics are we looking for when we hire?
Well, first of all, it's there's a bit of a catch 22, which doesn't answer your question, but in a way. But back to excellence and so on. Develop a relationship for being an extraordinary institution so that good people are knocking on your door and, you know, praying there will be a help wanted sign. Mm-hmm. One thing in your world that I think is incredibly critical, there's a fascinating piece that I ran across recently, and I'm completely irritated that I didn't find it before I wrote The Excellence Dividend, is Google did a study of their top employees and ended up with 8 traits that were, you know, consistently found with the best employees. Last on the list, number 8, was STEM. And the first 7 on the list were interpersonal stuff, mm-hmm. like listens, develops teamwork, you know, is not a bully, pays attention to other people's ideas. And then they did a second analysis, and it was what were the most innovative teams. And they were one of those organizations, and I have always thought this is appalling, that has A players and B players. And what they found was that the B teams beat the hell out of the A teams in terms of new ideas, speed of accomplishment, and again, exactly the same story. The B teams, STEM came in last, and the first seven items on a list of eight were all the interpersonal stuff. And then, you know, I've got a section on hiring in the book, and the one I loved was a guy who is founder and CEO of a fast-growing, middle-sized pharmaceutical company. And he said, first and foremost, we only hire nice people. Mm-hmm. And he went on and he said, look, and I think this is critically important. He said, look, yes, we need somebody who had an incredibly high grade point average in some narrow area of microbiology. But he said, you want to know a dirty little secret? There are a lot of them around in the world. Don't hire the jerks. And so there's this fascinating thing. Every list you see, which is obviously not technically accurate, but pretty much every list you see, the Mayo Clinic comes in as the top health services organization in the country. And a couple of guys who I know wrote a book called Management Lessons from the Mayo Clinic. And the one thing that sticks in my mind from 300 pages is you are the best bypass surgeon in the planet or in the state of Minnesota or the state of Maryland. And you're applying for a job with Mayo and I'm interviewing you. What you can't see, and maybe I'm doing it with my iPhone today as opposed to a pen on my hand, is as the interview goes along, I am literally counting the number of times you use the word we versus the number of times that you use the word I.
Interesting.
When you talk about, we were able to do this and develop that and so on. So, you know, I think that there's nothing more important than hiring. And I think it's hiring for the right reasons. And, you know, speaking as a McKinsey graduate, which is not that different from the world of your members, we are really lousy at it. My joke line from McKinsey was, who are the leaders of McKinsey and Company? The least worst people. And I'm not going to accuse CPAs of being as bad as McKinsey, but I think you probably know what I'm talking about.
Yes. Yeah, we do. We do. Okay. So all great suggestions, plenty of evidence backing them up. And still, you know, our profession without a doubt is being reshaped by that tech tsunami, as you call it in the book. What do you think the CPA of tomorrow looks like?
Well, obviously we can't suggest there will be the same number. You know, as it turns out in your world, I remember years ago, I gave a speech to the management section of the American Bar Association. And at coffee break, I had a conversation with a woman who's actually a member of the Oklahoma Supreme Court. And we were talking about something. And she said, Tom, you know what your problem is, don't you? And, you know, obviously there's the joke line. Well, I'll give you 100. She said, your problem is you watch too much of the O.J. Simpson trial. She said, 95% of the law is incredibly boring transactional stuff. And so the truth of the matter is there probably will be less CPAs and there will be less lawyers and there will be certainly less specialist doctors. Some guy pissed off a jillion people when he went to what was the specialty? Radiology conference. Mm-hmm. And he was a big deal. And he said, we should stop training radiologists now. And his logic was that, you know, basically what's happening now is that the CAT scanner is reading the results of 800,000 CAT scans. And you are a 46-year-old radiologist and you've been busy as hell, but you still have only seen 950 people. So it is a real threat. first of all, there's really an important part of answering this question, and you know, we can talk about this. Let's say, first of all, there is incredible disagreement about how fast this tsunami's coming. I've read stuff that says 40% of white collar jobs are under threat in the course of the next 10 to 20 years. And that's said by the smartest human being in the world, except for the other smartest human being in the world who said it's going to be 30 years. So yeah, there's huge variation. And part of my comment, and this is counter to, you know, to normal stuff, is I am willing to bet you dollars to donuts that the world will not be dramatically different, wildly different 5 years from now. Mm-hmm. And so guess what, dude? You got to make it through the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. And I do want you to be learning, and I do want you to be studying. And I do, you know, we had a guy fix our sub-zero refrigerator that had a problem a while back. And, you know, he's a two-person appliance company, and he's probably in his mid-40s. And he had just come back from a four-day conference on the Internet of Things that he had paid for himself. So, you know, the learning is imperative, but your CPAs are as much as a nurse in a hospital, comma, damn it, is a helping business. Mm-hmm. And the question is, a great CPA, adding one and one is two, you know, that's over with. A great CPA sits down with a small business client or sits down with a purchasing department head and helps that person rethink about their world. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't, you know, CPAs are, in my world, CPAs are, and I will add a damn it and two exclamation marks, they are not number crunchers. Mm-hmm. They are professionals attempting to be of help as much as a doctor, and mm-hmm. their bedside manner has to be as great as an excellent nurse. Mm-hmm. And so obviously we've got to do all the tech stuff, and we have to be perpetual students, but we have to be helpful to our clients. You know, I found this thing, it wasn't in the book, but I actually prepared for this conversation and found an old slide, and it, you know, it's pertinent to what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Disintermediation is overrated. Those who fear disintermediation and outsourcing should in fact be afraid of irrelevance. Outsourcing is just another way of saying that, quote, you have become irrelevant to your internal customers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a fair way to put it. For example, you know, I'm an old guy, and I've been writing books for 40 years, and I went gaga over Twitter about 4 or 5 years ago. And it's the same subject matter that I've used before, but it allows me to take it to a very different place. Mm-hmm. And 2% of the people who I meet on Twitter, I end up doing podcasts with, or I end up giving a speech to. Mm-hmm. And so I, to the best of my ability, have fully embraced the technology, but it is a way for me to be more helpful about the stuff I'm good at. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would beat the crap out of people at a CPA conference who thought they were a bunch of damned accountants. They are a bunch of professionals helping their internal or external clients make their business more successful. You know, period, all stop.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing. You know, when I'm that CPA, yeah, I can do the numbers for that 11-person business, and I can save you a lot of time, you know, and you don't have the time to learn the software and so on, but that's not the point.
Right.
You know, I can help you think about your relationships with your customers. I can think you help you think about your relationship with your spouse and 14-year-old kid. It's being helpful is the damn point.
It's so interesting that you know, we spend all our time today, it seems like, talking about technology, and the stuff you're talking about really boils down to being more human almost.
Yeah, I coined a term, and I, you know, unfortunately, I don't think it's going to be the next unicorn, but I have called the term extreme humanization.
Mm-hmm.
And it's exactly what you said. You know, the little touches that just make the difference. There's when you do a book, I've often said the most difficult part of it is doing the epigraph at the beginning, because you have to find 100 words spoken by somebody else that perfectly capture what you've been trying to do for the last 5 years. And the epigraph I used in this book was a story about a woman having an MRI, and somebody, I don't think it was the GE or the producers of the equipment, had put a little 2-inch by 2-inch mirror above where the patient is. And this woman, who was in fact an architect, said, with that tiny little mirror, while I was going through this process, I could see the tech. And I could see the nurse, and I could see people smiling at me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's got a fabulous one-liner at the end. And she said, all this technical equipment, and it was that 1-inch by 1-inch mirror that made all the difference.
Interesting.
And, you know, I was thrilled enough to make it page one of a 400-page book.
I'm not
willing to talk about the 30-year future of your 7-year-old.
Right.
I don't know what it's going to be like, but I know that it's going to take us 30 years to get to 30 years from now.
Yeah.
And I'm really convinced that what I'm talking about will certainly work for the next 10 or 15.
Well,
people are going to, I mean, I really want to focus on this with CPAs or any professional. You know, be helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Do not limit your definition of what you are. A CPA is not somebody with technical skills. They are a business professional who can help people run their hospital or their nonprofit or, in fact, their retail operation better. And, you know, McKinsey's run into its problems, but why the hell shouldn't a 3-person CPA firm be the McKinsey of their community?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No reason not to be.
That might be the answer to my next question. I was kind of curious, now that we've talked about all of that, I mean, what kind of advice would you give, like someone's graduating from college this month, right? And about to enter the workforce. What's the single best piece of advice you would give them considering the environment they're about to enter?
When you go into a client situation, keep your mouth shut, ask questions, and if you graduated with a 4.0 grade point average, make sure that they don't know that. It's, you know, it's learning, 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 learning. When I went to work for McKinsey, my first project manager may be the smartest person I ever met. He had a PhD in particle physics, for God's sake. He also was, you know, sang in a folk band, so he's very special. But he was the master of asking stupid questions,
mm-hmm.
and he wasn't embarrassed to. And he, you know, he's the best I had ever seen in terms of learning the client organization. And then, of course, he used every point of his, you know, 390 IQ or whatever the hell it was, to help the problem solving. But he was a fabulous listener. You know, I argue in the new book that excellence in listening should be core value number one. And, you know, part of my proof, and obviously proof is not really the right word, the crazy, incredible Richard Branson wrote a management book. His only management book. It is 360 pages long. And the first section in the book, which is 120 pages, is about listening.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And he said, you know, something, I've forgotten the numbers, but he said something like, among the 8 top traits of our leaders, 7 of them are directly related to listening. And, you know, and CPAs have a problem, just like lawyers, engineers, doctors, and so on. And that is, they were trained in technical excellence, and they will win the war long. I mean, this lovely thing, again, in the listening chapter, there's a Harvard med school doctor by the name of Jerome Groopman, and he wrote a book called How Doctors Think. And he says early on, I'm the doc. What is my best source of information about your ailment? And the answer is you. Mm-hmm. If we have a 25-minute conversation, 22 minutes will be completely useless. But in the 3 minutes out of the 25 minutes, I will gather information of the utmost importance. Comma, in the research, on average, when does the doctor interrupt the patient? And the answer is, you know, it's not to be believed because it sounds like a Saturday Night Live. The average doctor interrupts the patient after 18 seconds, you know, because, oh, I've seen it. I've seen one of those things before.
Right.
You know, I want you to have the most incredible technical excellence known to humankind, but be so kind as not to share it. You know? Right. You know, ask me where it hurts instead of telling me where it hurts before you've even seen me. And we and you know, I mean, it's lovely to have this conversation because, you know, I was in the Navy for 4 years, and my first employer was KPMG, which was then Pete Marwick Mitchell and Co. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, it was Pete Marwick, Washington D.C. was my first employer, and so, you know, I know what accountants are like, and I know what engineers like myself are like. We are always willing to share the solution before anybody has defined the problem.
Right. Right. Yep. It's you make some great points there about listening and asking the right questions. I mean, you made that point as well. I mean, a lot of times the right question can reveal as much as any kind of, you know, brainstorm.
Absolutely. And, you know, the reality is, and this annoys me about schools of accountancy or engineering or law or medicine, is you can learn to ask great questions. Mm-hmm. You know, I got on the question kick a few years ago. And the first incredibly sophisticated thing I did was to go to Amazon and type in books about asking questions. And, you know, I ended up with about 40 books. And, you know, I'm sure that 27 of them are useless. But the point is, it is a discipline that can be learned, mm-hmm. As much as neurosurgery or accounting can be learned. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I was going to add to you know, to your sentence, basically, was to say, learning to ask dumb questions. Mm-hmm. The questions that really require the person on the other end to explain to you how we do things around here.
Yep. I mean, that sets the foundation for everything, basically. So
there is one thing that I think fits all of this stuff that I do want to add before it slips my mind. Mm-hmm. I have a big section in the book, and, you know, directly related to a lot of the brethren who you and I are talking about, and it's about cross-functional communication. Mm-hmm. And I argue that the number one thing that puts a project behind or what have you is lousy cross-functional communication. You know, the accountants don't talk to the purchasing people, who don't talk to the engineers, and my argument is that there is a silver bullet, and the silver bullet is a 5-letter word called LUNCH, or lunch. And you know what I'm arguing, which is, you know, good numeracy in the world of accountants, is I'm running a finance department, an accounting department, whatever you want to call it. I am going to measure my employees on the number of lunches that they have with people in other functions. Mm. And, you know, my argument is accountants think that everybody in the purchasing department is idiots, and purchasing people think everybody in the accounting department is idiots. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, I invite you to lunch for a hamburger or something simple. And statistically speaking, I will bet that during that lunch, we will discover that we both have eighth grade daughters in the same school. Mm-hmm. And you will continue to be a professional accountant who is, you know, proud of your work. And I will continue to be a professional purchasing officer proud of my work, but the world will never be the same.
Right.
You know, it'll be Joe and Mary. And, you know, I might still get furious at the things that you make me do that slow me down, but the whole world changes. And you know, I think I put it in the book, and I know I've done it other places, is I've said lunch is more powerful than a $50 million investment with SAP and Oracle.
Yeah, amazing what a little conversation and communication can.
Yeah, we find out that we have things in common. You know, yeah. we're both trout fishermen in the Severn River outside of Annapolis, Maryland, for God's
right.
sake.
Right, right. So, I guess this is not really an unrelated note, actually, given that last little bit of conversation, but I just wanted to touch base really quick before I let you go about how prolific you are. You mentioned Twitter earlier on social media. I mean, you'll often get involved in some really kind of nuanced conversations with your followers. It's got to eat up a lot of time. And I guess my question is, now that social media has kind of established itself in our culture, I'm kind of curious what your thoughts are about it in general now. Good, bad, jury still out? What are your thoughts about?
Well, you know, there are two discussions. The discussion of, you know, what I do or what you do in our professional life or what have you with social media. And then there is the discussion that we won't have about Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg, and, you know, what happened in the election, regardless of whether you're happy with the outcome or not.
Right.
But in your world and mine, what I've discovered, I've met a lot of people, I've learned a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, learning is the game. And, you know, it's kind of funny in a way. You ask that question, and we talked about humanization, and I'm going slowly here because I'm looking something up, but it's only going to take me about a minute. Amazon.com, recent orders. Based on a conversation, a Twitter conversation this morning, I ordered a book called The Fuzzy and the Techie, Why the Liberal Arts Will Rule the Digital World. Hmm. And I bought a book called You Can Do Anything, The Surprising Power of a Useless Liberal Arts Education. Mm-hmm. And I'm really interested in this humanization thing, this extreme humanization thing. And maybe these books are going to be crap. I have no idea. But I learned about them on Twitter, and it's important enough to what I do that I'm, you know, willing to spend $19 on one and $27 on the other to see if I can learn more about this stuff. So it's meeting new people who come from new perspectives. Some of it, of course, is, you know, just a hoot. It's like having a conversation with the athletic director at the University of California, Berkeley. And, you know, stuff like that is kind of cool. I would be the first to acknowledge it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in my experience on Twitter, which is not trivial anymore, I mean, not trivial by this time, there's not a whole lot of crap. And if there is somebody who makes a comment that I think is, you know, really out of place, it takes somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 seconds to block them and get them out of my life. And,
right.
You know, I have had a few trolls and so on, but, you know, it's been trivial. And one thing that really has been terrific is that I've had a lot of conversations with authors of, you know, books like the one, you know, the couple that I bought today. So I think it can be a terrific learning experience. And I think that you really can meet, quote unquote, meet, or in some cases, you know, end up actually meeting people. And to me, it's been worth the investment, though I will admit that I occasionally get caught up in something and find that more time has passed than I would have desired.
We've all been down.
You know, it's all of life is learning.
Yep.
And, you know, when you're learning, there's a lot of wasted time, but there are also some nuggets there that make you look at the world in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. What's next for you? What are you working on now?
Well, I'm doing some work with the Drucker Institute in Claremont, California. And they are really focused on the incredible damage relative to jobs and innovation that has been brought about by the last 40 years of slavish devotion to maximizing shareholder value. Mm-hmm. And there are a bunch of us who are worrying about that. You know, it's a horrible number, and it, you know, comes from people who've really done their homework. 91% of corporate profits go into share buybacks and dividends, and 9% go into innovation and helping your employees. And that's a real disaster. It's a real tragedy. And so it's in my opinion, it's completely related to what you and I are talking about here. In the sense that if we are going to have this tech tsunami, and I'd go back to the moral dimension and so on, we really have to spend our time helping people grow.
Yep, yep.
I mean, you know, the good news about, good news about being my age, I can't think of any really, but my comment that I make to people is that I only have one measure of life. And that is, can I walk by a mirror without barfing? And the way you walk by a mirror without barfing is by helping people.
There you go. Great note to end on. Tom Peters, thanks for being here and thanks for your time. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I have enjoyed the conversation immensely.
That was the one and only Tom Peters. The website is tompeters.com. And seriously, follow him on Twitter, folks. He's at Tom_Peters. The man works Twitter like a master. He holds complete conversations there, for God's sakes, and about important stuff, too. And that book, the one that Tom is irritated that didn't sell better, it's called The Professional Service Firm 50. 50 Ways to Transform Your Department into a Professional Service Firm Whose Trademarks Are Passion and Innovation. It's available on Amazon. Do me a favor, make him happy, order a copy, okay? And by the way, pretty much all of Tom's written and speech material from the last 15 plus years, and it's a lot, is available free to download, by the way, at tompeters.com and excellencenow.com. So there's no excuse not to learn from this guy. And don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. We're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPAs. Start mastering those future-ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning. That is it, gang. Have a great week. We'll talk to you again next week.